In this episode, I interview Kate Benson, the International Director for Education of the Society of NLP.
This is the Increase Your Influence podcast for more influence on yourself and others. With licensed NLP Master Trainer and VU University Certified OBM Trainer Coach Joost van der Leij. The ABC model. The A stands for antecedents. The B stands for behavior. And the C stands for consequences. Research proves that consequences have a much bigger influence on our behavior than antecedents.
So I'm very proud to have Kate Benson on the Increase Your Influence podcast. Kate Benson is the International Director for Education of the Society of NLP. She has a very long history in education and is currently delivering training program called Teaching Excellence, where she helps teachers to apply NLP to their work, but also other professionals work with kids better. Hi, Kate. How are you doing?
Hi, Joost. I'm very well, thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Good. We talked, we have talked so many times, but when we talked, at one point, we were discussing the ABC model, where A stands for antecedents, B for behavior, and C for consequences, and where research shows that the consequences have much bigger impact on future behavior than antecedents. And I was talking about how little of the ABC model can be found in neuro-linguistic programming, NLP, except in your work. You seem to use the ABC model of actually rewarding people for good behaviors much more than other NLP trainers. Can you explain a little bit about your background of as an educator and how rewarding positive behaviors is used within education? And also the same question for how you use it in your training programs.
Gosh, all right. There's about four questions in there. You may have to remind me about them as you come along. I'm not actually sure, a bit like in NLP, really. I'm not really sure that in all of education, the ABC model and positive reward is used as much as it should be. You certainly find within the primary or elementary school education system, the the use of positive reward,
right,
for appropriate or good behaviour is quite common. But once you get into secondary school, it's really not necessarily the case. Okay. Often it's a punishment system that.
That's true.
And
so just to recap. So it is used quite a lot in the primary school stuff, and there it works, because otherwise they wouldn't work. But then suddenly in the secondary school, then they stop using it and they switch back to negative consequences and punishments.
Yes, that's exactly right, Joost. I mean, there is no rhyme or reason or logic to it, but that's the reality.
Yes.
So I suppose I became interested in this in a number of different ways, probably going back to looking for strategies that would work with young people who had really been failed by that secondary school system.
Right.
So there were, when I worked in further education college, which is 16 plus education,
mm-hmm.
We had a lot of young people, especially young men, boys, coming in who had been failed by the system,
right,
but with very low skills, very poor attitude to learning, or attitudes to learning, very negative experience because of their negative experiences. So I looked for ways of motivating them.
Excellent.
and encouraging them. And
so, one moment, I just want to emphasize something, because that's exactly how negative consequences work. Of course, teachers try to punish kids for the actual bad behavior that they just did in the classroom. But they don't understand that that negative consequence also connects to the whole learning and going to school and learn stuff.
And exactly, because so, they generalize the experience. So they're punished for this little bit, and then all the bad feelings and the stress chemicals associated with them don't disappear in that moment once the punishment's finished. So I was interested. That was the spark for me, was trying to find a way. And of course, as I did the research, not to the extent that you have done the research, obviously, yes, but in terms of learning about brain chemicals and neurotransmitters and starting to understand how learning works, which is what I was really interested in. How does the brain learn? How does the person learn? What do they need? So, you know, I couldn't inject, you know, happy chemicals into them. So I had to find ways of generating those chemicals so that they would feel good in the first place about themselves and about the experience they were having, so that they would then want to be there. So, you know, one of the other ways of looking at that, there's a number of different layers you can look at it, is the difference between commitment and compliance. Right. These kids had been made to comply through negative consequences.
Right.
And I wanted them to be committed for themselves through positive reward.
Right.
So that was one of the things. The other thing that I found that was really interesting was that, of course, I learned through NLP to be able to take people back to the place where they were most effective. We use that technique a lot, don't we, in terms of personal history change and things like this. So, of course, when you think about learning, when are you the most voracious, happiest, most motivated and committed learner is when you're little. So I found that if I used the things that they had been rewarded with when they were young,
right,
that reaccessed without the use, without needing to do a trance or an induction, it reaccessed all those good feelings and those positive chemicals. So essentially, a lot of the things that I do or I learned to do was to regress people to that place where they were happy. So, you know, you asked me earlier, you know, why do I use stickers? Right. I use stickers because it brings back the lovely feeling you had when you were little and you got a reward sticker. And of course, at the same time, you anchor to the sticker all the positive consequences, and you future pace it so that it's taken forward to the next time that they feel really good, or they have a reward or whatever. So you generalize from this tiny little sticker that you pop on somebody's shirt collar, you generalize that out into lots of positive experiences about learning or anything else that you want to do. And it's interesting, Jos, because as you know, in the UK at the moment, we're doing very well with our vaccines. About the only thing that we're doing well, but we're doing better. And we started vaccinating the over 55s today.
Right.
And one of the things that they give you when you go to having had your vaccine is a sticker.
Good.
And there are people walking around happily, you know, sort of displaying their stickers.
Yes,
and it's the same principle.
Positive consequences works. It's really interesting because together with the VU University here in Amsterdam, we are researching whether you can actually use hypnosis and trance states to, fool the brain into thinking that it got rewarded. Of course, the good feeling. So if people come to study or train with you and they start to feel good, that is also a positive reward. But actually using previous experiences of rewards and tie them to current behaviors, that is something that we're also researching. And it seems that you are doing exactly that in your training program. So to wrap it up, let me just stress that Kate is doing teaching excellence in Amsterdam in the early October. Please check the website to know when Kate is coming to Amsterdam to deliver the Teaching Excellence Program. It's a really great program for teachers and other professionals who work with the children. And I actually personally think it's also a must-have course for trainers, because it's a kind of a trainer's training. I know that my the quality of my training programs hugely increased after I've done teaching excellence.
The brain type of a famous person. Just as there are body types, everyone also has one of the 9 brain types. Your brain type determines your behavior in part.
Well, I'm going to give away Kate her brain type. She has a type 7 hedonist brain type. And I find this particularly funny because I've worked a lot with Kate, and the deadly sin of the hedonist is gluttony. And the main virtue is extreme moderation. Nowadays, when I say extreme moderation, Kate is able to keep her face without changing. But it used to be that she was look at me horribly when I said something about extreme moderation, even though I did recognize that Kate was quite a bit more moderate than most average hedonists. Nevertheless, what she calls moderation is by no way what I call moderation. At least like 10 years ago or 15 years ago when we start working. And nowadays, I think she has extreme moderation very well under her belt. But I always found it very funny to see her explain to me that I might not see it, but that compared to what she used to do in her life, she was extremely moderate whenever we were out partying. So, Kate, thank you for also going to explain a bit about how you use brain types. So can you say what your experiences are ever since you learned about brain types?
Yes, I mean, I'm no expert, and I'm enjoying the training at the moment, learning more in detail and more in depth about brain types. But I did find reading the Neurogram book quite a revelation, and the small parts of training I've done with you. So I think what it's helped me to do is to be more precise and elegant where I can recognize the brain type. One of the things that I've always been interested in doing is getting better results with less effort. That might be a hedonist brain type thing as well. I'm not sure. Oh, I very much in the classroom want people to be able to do less and get better results so that they're more effective and efficient that way. And I think that's the same with the brain types. So being able to recognize somebody's brain type and then hone the NLP skills, choose from the whole range of skills that we have, which ones precisely to use in a particular way to get better results. I think that for me is the joy of the brain types work. Where I found it useful personally is really understanding, especially when I've been looking and working with kids who have learning differences. Mm-hmm. If we can identify their brain type, it helps to, distinguish the behavior that's associated with the brain type from the behavior that's associated with the label that they've been attached with. And it's more useful, I found, to look for interventions and strategies that are to do with the brain type than to do with the label.
Definitely, yes. So we make a distinction between the brain type behaviors, which are basically innate behaviors that you have to deal with, but where you can transform them into healthy, positive behaviors, and learned behaviors. And if people have undesired negative learned behaviors, then you can help them unlearn them. So that's basically two different processes. I always say that we use the brain types as a guide to where you want to go with a coaching or training program, and then use NLP as the most effective way to actually get there.
I think that's a really helpful way of viewing it, really, I think.
Right.
I think in my personal life, it's been very useful as well. It once you start to understand people's brain types, you don't really have to get quite so upset with them, do you really? Because you go, oh, that's their brain type. And also gives you a way of a strategy for being able to respond to them in a way that's more positive for them, I suppose. Gets makes them happier, makes them feel better.
Well, that definitely is the case in my personal life, because before I knew about those brain types, I was an asshole, and I just thought that everybody else was really, really stupid because they did not understand the world as I did. And then I figured out, or I learned through brain types, that they actually, those people have different brains. They have a different way of dealing, of motivating themselves, dealing with their emotions. But also very important, their cognition is different. So they're not stupid at all if you reason from their perspective of the world and just doesn't happen to be my perspective. So I actually enrich my life, especially my personal relations with other people, by large.
Well, and I think that's true as well. I mean, one of the things that I've, I know about you and Mary Jose is that, you know, you're the same brain type. So one of the reasons that you sort of rub along so well together and have such a good relationship is because you understand each other. And most of us, I suppose, and I don't guess most of us would be in that position. And also, I can imagine that with some brain types, the two of them together would be a really bad match. You know, two successful workers is a good match. There are some brain types that might be a bad match.
Actually, two successful workers in the literature is a disaster.
Is it really? Yeah. Oh, right. Okay.
Because they're going to try to be the most successful.
Okay.
And then they're going to try to upstage each other, and that will lead to disaster. But of course, knowing this, whenever I see this happening with me and Marie-José, I will basically recognize it, and then I'll just say, well, darling, you are much more successful than I am. And then she will gloat a bit, oh, yes, I know.
Yeah, but you see, then that triggers something then, Jos, because your mortal sin, of course, it means in your virtue is to be honest.
Extremely honest. Brutally honest.
Yes. Brutally honest, yeah. But I found that
I give a very small example of being brutally honest. Yesterday, I told her that in fact she did get a bit older every day.
Oh.
She was very angry at me.
Well, yes, I mean, but then that I'm not sure whether or not that's that's just because of your brain type. I had a conversation with Tom yesterday on the phone, who's a loyalist. And I said something about, oh, I'm going on a diet. I want to lose some weight. And he went, yeah, you need to.
Right.
It's like, oh, thanks, Tom. You know, it's like, but one of the things that I noticed, for example, is I work in a charity,
mm-hmm.
and I work with a group of trustees. And one of the trustees, who again, on the surface, I would have nothing in common with this person at
right.
all. She's a vicar.
Mm-hmm.
She's, you know, an Anglican vicar. On the surface, you wouldn't think that we had anything in common. But we're both type sevens, and we
right.
get on like an absolute house on fire. And we are very creative and innovative. Of course, what we're not good at doing is sustaining it in terms of, as soon as it gets repetitive or established, even we want to move on. We want to move on. Oh, we've done that now. Let's go. What's next?
Hedonists do not want to run the business. They want to develop the business.
That's right. Absolutely. And that's been my, for my understanding of myself, that's been quite helpful, because one of the things I've always done is sort of abandon ship before the point where it might go, you know, sort of stratospheric, because I've done it. I only ever want to be at the leading edge of something. I don't ever want to be manage. I would say I want to lead it. I don't want to manage it.
Right.
So I'm very happy to hand over to other people.
Well, that makes perfect sense, especially also with the viable system model. That's a very specific model. So you might not, or the listeners might not know this model, But please, if you're interested, look up the vital system model. On the neurogram.nl website, there's actually a very large paper out on the vital system model and brain types, especially in terms of recruiting the right personnel for the right position. Because you can see that in each organization, there are different systems, and that depending on what kind of brain type, you will function better in a certain system. So the hedonists function very well in the exploration system, where they can explore the future or the environment to find new goals and new strategies. But they do well very badly in the running the business system, which is all about running it as efficient as possible and only using known goals and known strategies. So in case you're interested, check it out on neurogram.nl and or contact me. So thank you, Kate, for these wonderful stories. We're going to listen in the hypnosis section to one of your meditative hypnotic trancey stories. And, well, we see each other again in early October in Amsterdam. So thank you very much and see you soon.
You're welcome and thank you for inviting me, Joost. Nice to talk to you again.
Hypnosis. By using hypnosis, you program your unconsciousness directly in a way that influences you positively.
As an extraordinary gift, Kate has provided us with a real recording that she has made for one of her clients. Often when Kate works with children, she records special hypnotic stories for them, and this is one of those stories.
Hello Charlie, this is your friend Kate here, and I've made this special bedtime message just for you. I am very proud of you, and you can be very proud of yourself, because Mummy tells me that you were fantastic at getting up and going to school in the morning, and I'm sure that now you've found a way of going to school that gives you the time and relaxation for yourself and puts you in charge. This means that every day will get better and better and easier because you're a very special boy. Now, it would be really good to listen to this special message as you begin to fall asleep. So settle down and snuggle up whilst I share some special secrets with you to help you feel even better whenever you want to. This is a story about a little boy, very like you, who sometimes used to have bad feelings, which he didn't like and was very sad, because he wanted to have good feelings more of the time. One night, when he was just drifting off to sleep, he began to dream the dreams of the dreaming tree. This was a big, beautiful tree with big, strong branches that went all the way up into the beautiful sky and deep, deep roots that went all the way down into the ground. The dreaming tree was very happy because his roots that went deep into the ground kept him strong and secure. And his branches, which stretched way up into the sky, could gather all the knowledge and wisdom from the planet. The dreaming tree told the little boy a secret. He said that he could have a very special place inside his mind, where he could go to exchange bad feelings for good ones. The little boy thought this was a great idea, but wondered how he could do this. The dreaming tree said that he would introduce him to a wizard who would show him how to do this. And then, just at that moment, out of a secret door inside the dreaming tree came a wizard. He was very friendly and was smiling, and he had a tall hat and a magic wand. It was more of a boy's wand than my magic wand, and it looked like it was made out of a branch of the dreaming tree. Now, Charlie, if you close your eyes and let your mind wander, you may see the wizard too. Maybe he will tell you his name. I don't know if he will tell you his name right now or in a little while, but I do know that you can trust this lovely wizard. Now just pretend to imagine that the wizard is leading you to your own very special place inside your mind, where no one else can go. This is a lovely place. Have a look around at the landscape. What does it look like? Is it inside or outside? What are the colours like in this special place? I bet it's fantastic. Now the wizard is showing you a special way to take a bad feeling that you might have had and take it outside of your body so you can see it, but you can't feel it anymore. Then he shows you how you can turn the bad feeling around and change it to the opposite, a really good feeling. As you watch how this happens, you might notice the feeling change colour, and maybe it begins to move in a different way. Then the wizard shows you now how to put the good feeling back inside your body so that you can really feel wonderful. And notice how good that feeling is. Now, the wizard says, go on, Charlie, see if you can find another bad feeling and change it into another wonderful feeling. That's it. See how easy it is. The wizard gives you a secret password now that only you and he know. This secret password will mean that you can go back to this special place anytime you want to. So whenever you have a feeling that you don't want to have and you'd like to change it into a really good feeling, you can simply take a deep breath, say the magic word, and come back here to change the feelings to wonderful, comfortable feelings in no time at all. Now, Charlie, it's time to go to sleep and dream the dreams of the dreaming tree, so in the morning you can wake up feeling really refreshed, relaxed and wonderful. Night night, Charlie. Sleep well.
Thank you for listening to the Increase Your Influence podcast. For more tools to increase your influence, go to influence.amsterdam.